into a mic, and then we would have a dancer doing the motion capture, and so the audience was like privy to all of the behind the scenes, so to speak. And in this version, we are trying to integrate all of these learnings, but also how we design the story and how our protagonist is going on this journey into the quote unquote underworld, so to speak, which is an online platform, social media platform that we've created for this show. And there is an in real life pop-up called the Styx. They enter this space, but then their whole experience catapults into this virtual space as well. So we have these meta experiences going on for the audience to witness. And we've also put up a bit of the curtain, so you don't get to see all of the magic that you were in different iterations. So it has a purpose now. The motion capture when it's happening, or when you're seeing certain projection or certain memories pop up, and when you're having the physical actors in the space doing what they're doing as well. So I think it's been a bit of an ebb and flow over the years, for sure.
Well, it sounds very interesting and very modern and very relevant and poignant. It seems like really a story for today. So I want to ask in closing, what you hope that audiences will take away from Eurydice Fragments.
I hope that they take away, that they feel that there is a sense of like belonging, that every person is striving to belong, no matter who they are, where they've come from, what they've experienced, that we all want to feel loved. And this person just happens to be trans, and that they are deserving of love, just like everyone in the world. And that it is scary to be vulnerable, to be completely honest with people, about who you are and where you're at in life. But that when one can be honest and vulnerable, that embracing someone is such a beautiful feeling, and that we can learn and feel stronger, as a community, or even just like in relationships one-on-one, or as a family unit, or something like that. And that love is really love is love is love, and that, yeah, especially in these hard times, with what we're seeing in the world, it's important to tell people how you feel and to be honest, because sometimes they don't know, or they forget, or they get scared. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me. Is there anything else you think our listeners should know about yourself or about Eurydice Fragments?
I think I shared a lot. I don't want to spoil the show. It's going to be so much fun. It's such a great time, and everyone has really brought all of their best selves to this rehearsal process, and we can't wait to share it with you. So please come on out. We have got four shows this weekend, so yeah, I would love to share it with you.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, Taya.
Thank you.
My interview with Taya Kasahara, who is the star and co-creator of Eurydice Fragments, that plays starting tomorrow, November 15th to November 17th. You can find out more information about IndieFest and grab tickets at reopera.ca. That's REOPERA.ca. And you can find tickets there and information about Ultraviolets, Eurydice Fragments, and more. And now joining me remotely is Stephen. Hello, Stephen. Can you hear me? Can you hear me, Stephen? Well, let's try that again. Stephen, can you hear me?
Yeah, a little bit.
Oh. There you
I
are.
can hear you now. Here we go. Here we are.
All right, Stephen, you're joining us to talk about the East Side Culture Call, right?
Absolutely. So I'm here to talk about the East Side Art Culture Crawl, which is taking place November 14th to November 7th, basically starting today. And it's been running for 28 years. It's a 4-day visual arts showcase and involves 500 plus artists on Vancouver's East Side opening their studios to the public. The event is focused on the area bounded by Columbia Street, First Avenue, Victoria Drive, and the waterfront, and involves painters, jewelers, sculptors, furniture makers, weavers, potters, printmakers, photographers, glassblowers, and more, from emerging artists to those internationally established. I actually got to talk to a couple of the artists who were involved this year. Specifically, I spoke with Darren Wright and Andrew Call. Darren Wright is an artist that is, she's a sculpturist, and she creates sculptures. And she specifically specializes in food sculptures as well as multimedia installations. One of her ongoing projects is a massive sculpture of all the items, all the 12 items involved in a Ukrainian Christmas dinner. And that's a fascinating thing which might be in progress when you visit her studio. Angel Kao is a really cool visual artist who does essentially greeting cards as well as stickers and other kind of consumable items. And I spoke to her about her creative process, how she got started in the middle of COVID, and how she's looking forward to having everyone visit her studios. In any case, please feel free to drop by at the Eastside Arts Cultural Crow. It's starting today, running from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. And on Thursday and Friday, that's today and tomorrow, as well as 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday, that's this weekend. And if you go to the website, culturecrow.ca, you'll be able to see the program and the route and the map, and it'll be really cool. So, yeah, everyone go out and visit, and it's completely free. So it's great.
Awesome. Thank you so much for the update, Stephen, and we hope everyone will get out to see the Eastside Culture Crawl this weekend.
Thank you so much.
Great. Thanks a lot.
All right. You can also expect more coverage on the Culture Crawl tomorrow during Speak Up, Listen Up, Act Upon from 10 to 11 a.m. as Charlotte Sistacy is interviewing an administrator at the festival as well as two artists. 10 to 11 a.m. tomorrow on CJSF. And now we're going to hear another piece that I did. This one is about, well, you'll find out right now.
It's spawning season for salmon, and creeks across British Columbia's lower mainland are overflowing with mature salmon, making the return journey home from the oceans where they matured to the placid pools upstream where they will spawn, deposit their eggs, and start the cycle for the next generation of salmon. Many of these fish began their lives as alevin, or baby salmon, at the Mossum Creek Hatchery and Education Center in Port Moody. And this weekend at the center, a different kind of youngster will start their own journey as kids attend Homecoming, the Journey of the Salmon, to learn about the famous fish and its importance to the ecosystems it inhabits. Simona Khutnyakova is the founder of the Salmon Forest School and is organizing the hands-on learning experience for small fry. Her forest school, which approaches education from a holistic and alternative perspective, was inspired by a walk in the woods.
So every time when I need inspiration, I go to the forest. And my favorite walk is in Capilano River, which is close to the hatchery. And I went there and I was like, you know, like a light bulb. I was like, salmon. I look at the water. Water gets nutrition from salmon. Trees get nutrition from salmon, all the plants, all the animals, and us as well. Then I came home and I started like drawing like a circle that fish was in the middle and all the animals. And you know, it was like every time, like more and more and more. And I always knew like I wanted to pass all my knowledge and all my experience I learned to the little generation. That's how Salmon Forest was born.
Once the idea had taken root, Simona needed a home for the salmon forest.
Like, firstly, I was maybe a little bit foolish and I thought I can just do it from the park, which, you know, everyone told me that it's not that simple. And then I was like, okay, I need to think outside of box. And I literally, what I started to do was on Google Maps and finding hatcheries. Because the main point was like, okay, I would love to do forest school camp or any forest school program. And let's say just go on a field trip to hatchery that we can have like hands-on experience. And then I found Mawson Creek. And when I opened their website, they were renting the facility. And I was like, okay, let me see.
The moment she arrived at the Mossum Creek Hatchery and Education Center, she knew it was a perfect fit.
Okay, so, yeah, very cool, right?
Yeah.
I know, when I saw it for the first time, I was like, oh my goodness, this is dream, you know? Honestly, I almost cried because I was like, you know, like when you have that feeling that you feel like you're home. And that really reminds me from my childhood because my dad used to work for a forest in Slovakia. And like when I would visit my dad in his job, it would be like exactly like what you see on the shelf, like all the bears and, you know, like all the animals and all these books about anything from the nature. And when I came here, I was like, I'm gonna do anything it takes to get the place, you know.
Initially, Simona was nervous about her new project.
Of course, you know, stress and everything. It was very like, how I'm gonna do it, right? Like new community, like nobody knows me, and the trust, right? Like I'm gonna be playing with kids outside in the forest, in an area where there are bears, cougars. But I was just like so positive about it. Like, I think my positiveness was like overachieving everything.
But the salmon forest was an immediate hit.
So we started in spring, and first week was very cool. Like, you know, we connected with children and everything. And the second week we sold out. Wow. So we were actually full. Then the next summer, I didn't have to really do any marketing because all the kids, they came from spring break. They actually brought their friends. So I was like, yes.
Salmon Forest students are immersed into the Pacific Northwest ecosystem and use salmon as a focus to develop skills and learn about a wide range of topics.
All the education, it's going around the salmon. Every time when I see what we are learning from sustainability, every time I can see like salmon could be part of it. Because if, you know, we are talking about pollution, if we are talking about, I don't know, like anything else, you know, always you can talk about salmon and how if we do this, this will benefit salmon.
By taking students out of their traditional learning environment, the Salmon Forest provides opportunities to discover, imagine, and be inspired in ways they might never have achieved in a typical classroom.
All the learning is play-based and child-led as well. So at the end, one boy came to me and he's like, so we're not learning anything today? And I just smiled because I was like, okay. And then I went through the whole day and he answered exactly everything. And I just smiled. I was like, no, we're not learning anything today. Because if they see like, oh, I'm just playing, right? But, you know, like this is the thing, like when we play a game, the game has so many different meanings. It's just like, you know, like, okay, how do you play with other children, right? It gives you like the sense of social skills, right? Okay, now we play a game, very famous game, very within the kids. It was about a salmon, mosquito, and a bear. You learn about the life cycle, right? And who eats who and stuff like that. And but, you know, in kids' mind, it was like free time, we're playing, right?
Hutnyakova says she's received great feedback from parents about their children's experience with the salmon forest.
So mainly it was that kids were very calm and also that they learn a lot. And I can tell you one very cool and cute example. When dad came and he said we had a skill day that was all about carving, I said to all the kids, like, I trust you. Like, bring your tools, bring your knife. And I said, your, like, my knife? And I was like, yeah, your knife. I am a believer, like, if you can explain them how to do it, right? Like, we did, like, our, it's called blood bubble, right? Like, when you do and play with tools. And they showed me. Some of them, they were very, like, afraid, which I totally was acceptable, right? I was like, okay, if you're not feeling, it's fine. It's not your time. Maybe it will be next day or next year. It doesn't matter, right? But you have to make the choice. So that's what I was telling parents. Like, if kid in that age can make their own choice based on their needs, that's something for me, like, I want, you know, if I wish I wouldn't be like, oh, I don't know, like, what my super buddy's gonna say, right? Because, you know, sometimes you get influenced from other people. But I can see more and more kids are really standing up for themselves. And when that boy was carving his hiking stick and he came, when his dad came to pick him up, and we got like an email saying like, I don't know what you did, but I never saw him that proud. And that's the thing that, for example, the day before, like he would be, you know, like playing and doing stuff and not really like curious, right? Because he didn't, I would say like he didn't know what to do because, you know, it's new environment. Sometimes you really like don't know what to do with yourself if you get some sort of freedom or like, oh, they are listening to me, right? And I saw the shift in behavior because I was like, oh yeah, of course you can use your tool. That's why you brought it. And he, you know, like the look in his eyes, like, okay, can I use it? And I was like, you know what? Like, you are excellent in that. Would you mind teaching your buddy? Because I think he's a little bit struggling and I think he needs a little bit of help. And now, you know, from that boy, he becomes a leader. And that was just like, you know, and then I was like, okay, guys, we need to clean up. It's almost time to go home. He was first in the line, ready. Because, you know, he was just like, oh, yeah, they are listening to me. I'm going to listen to them.
Homecoming, The Journey of the Salmon, is a one-day, hands-on opportunity for kids to try out what the salmon forest has to offer, including participation in a live salmon dissection. It might seem gruesome, but Simona says it's one of her and her students' favorite experiences and is a great learning tool.
I am super excited. It's an event about dissecting a fish. What we are planning to do, we're planning to do a demo, which is going to be live. It will happen here in Molson Creek Hatchery 2 years ago when I was volunteering for Swim Keepers. We did that by the creek, right by the creek. So you can imagine the smell from the dead fish. And with kids from the forest school program, we came to the creek, we picked the fish. Kids were trying to pick the most greasy and kind of like very smelly. So we picked a few fish, put it on the rock, cut it, and then the learning started. Like, okay, what do you think? We found X. What do you think it is? Is it the male or female, right? So everything was based on like guessing and your curiosity, right? And like trying to see like, okay, how the fish and everything inside the fish, we can compare to ourselves, right? So this is the science, the biology behind it, right? And then we can talk about like, okay, the whole life cycle, right? Like how they're coming back when they stop feeding themselves, when, you know, like all the process, how it happened. Yeah, and the event and why we do dissection, because I saw it and I saw how it was just amazing stuff. You don't get to do it at school anymore, right? And that's why I want them to give an opportunity, not just, you know, PowerPoint and see like, okay, because that's the best how they can understand and remember. That's why we are trying to keep the group very small, because it's very hands-on learning and very experimental. And we'll be dissecting one fish, which we actually got from an egg intake that happened last month. So this season we got chum salmon. Those are big fish, so I'm very excited. So while Shelly will be doing the demo, all the other kids and every other participant will do their paper dissection. We can have, you know, any questions and, you know, like whoever wants to touch it or, you know, so it's more than welcome to do that. And of course, we'll go through all the cycles, all the species that are coming to our water. We'll be doing creek observation as well, because that's how you learn the best. And below us is the hatchery. So right now, because we did the egg intake only a month ago, so in the incubator, right now we have all the chum eggs. Mm. So finger crossed for the next generation.
Kids who attend Homecoming, The Journey of the Salmon will get a chance to take a break from screen time, exercise their curiosity and imagination, and do some hands-on, play-based learning.
I'm trying to step out as an educator. For example, if we go to the forest, because we go like in this area, but also in the forest, we call it fairy circles. Those are like wooden stamps around, and it's only forest area. So, of course, the favorite part is nature pee. I usually carry like two baskets full of tools. They have like field guides, all ID cards that you can find, plants, mushrooms, trees, anything, measuring tape, ropes, scissors, and, you know, all kinds of tools. And usually, like, first day of the camp, like, I tell them, like, okay, this is your tools. Those are not toys. These are tools. So first, you know, we need to go through the process of explaining what's the meaning of the tools and what's the meaning of the toys. And when tools, it's becoming a toys, it needs to go away. And the reason why I'm doing those baskets is just, like, I really want them to come to me and be like, oh, cool, you know what, I came with this idea, but I need something, right? And that's what I need, like, their curiosity, and they, like, they are the one creating something new, and, you know, like, that imagination, because I've noticed it's disappearing, and we are trying through child-led play and storytelling, which is a big part, right, to tell a story, so...
Homecoming, The Journey of the Salmon, will run Saturday, November 16th from 1 to 2:30 p.m. at the Mossum Creek Hatchery and Education Center in Port Moody. Tickets are available on Eventbrite, and you can find out more about the Salmon Forest at linktr.ee/the_salmon_forest. From Port Moody, Jesse Wenslaw, CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, reporting. This piece is made possible by funding from the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative and is made available to media outlets across the country at frequencynews.ca.
Hello, boys and girls. My name is Fat Lip, and this is my friend, Sammy the Salmon.
What to do?
Today, we're going to teach you some fun facts about salmon and a brand new dance. Let me introduce to you a brand new dance. I know you're going to love it.
Check out Homecoming Journey of the Salmon. Once again, linktr.ee/the_salmon_forest. You can look up the Salmon Forest on all social media platforms. And sign your kids up for the event on Saturday. Or just go check out the Mossum Creek Hatchery. Cool stuff. And now, the last piece for the day, which comes from Danny. And this is a cool piece about a cool program in Burnaby.
Whether it be brass, woodwinds, strings, shakers, or even synthesizers, the sound of music has become much more accessible for Burnaby residents thanks to the Harmony for All program, which offers free instrument lending, music outreach programs, and community groups and scholarships for those wanting to participate in music lessons. Recently, the program won the Creative City Network of Canada's IDEA Award, which recognizes the significant contributions of any individual, organization, or municipality working in the cultural sector that exemplifies the principles of inclusion, diversity, equity, and accessibility through cultural programs. Since being recognized for this award, CJSF was able to sit down for an interview with Tanya Rankin, the Fine Arts Coordinator for the Harmony for All program, to speak on the inspiration behind the program as well as the ways in which they hope to grow in the future. Please take a listen to some of what she had to say.
It was actually inspired by one of our city councillors, Councillor Joe Keithley, who's the lead vocalist and guitarist for the punk band DOA. As a lover of music himself, he really felt the impact through his childhood and through adulthood being involved with music and feeling the connection that music brings and that it's a universal language. You don't have to speak the same language or be interested in the same things. If you're connected through music, you can be connected anywhere with anybody. And he wanted that to be true for all of the residents of the city of Burnaby.
Next, during the interview, we asked Tanya Rankin whether there were any current barriers of entry for the program, as well as what the application process is like for instrument lending, musical education outreach programs, and the scholarship opportunities provided by the Harmony for All program.
It depends what you're wanting. So for the lending, anybody can apply. It's a quick and easy online application. And we just want to know what your intent is and why this is important to you. Tell us that. And then if we have the instrument you're requesting, we have 400 instruments. So there's a lot of options for people. Then we can get an instrument into your hands. With the scholarship program, because it's actually a financial commitment from the city of Burnaby, we do require proof of low income status for those individuals. So it's not a barrier, but more of an opening for people who are experiencing financial restrictions to getting music education. So people can borrow an instrument as well as get a scholarship to help pay for the lessons, which can be quite cost prohibitive mm-hmm. with lessons within the city of Burnaby. It's not cash towards the person. It's a lesson in our centers and we'll help pay for it through the scholarships. The outreach program, there are no barriers. The organizations reach out to us, and if you're serving people who reside in the city of Burnaby, we'll come to you. We'll slot you into our calendar and bring a musical experience to those individuals.
Later on, Tanya explains what the community response has been to the Harmony for All program.
It's been really, really good. We have tried to get into all of the schools, the elementary and secondary schools, and let them know about the possibilities for renting an instrument, not renting, getting a loan of an instrument, a free loan of an instrument. And we are trying to get the word out to as many people as possible that if you live in the city of Burnaby, you can also borrow an instrument. The response from the organizations that serve people with barriers has been pretty phenomenal. They really are interacting with us the most. The 3,500 people we've now served are mostly going through that outreach component. And so all of the programs that we can bring to them, musicians, interactions with musical instruments, it has really made a difference to an awful lot of people who would otherwise never come into our centers.
Another question that we had for Tanya asked how the program was able to source all of these instruments to lend out to the community of Burnaby. Here's what she had to say in response to this.
I would say 99% of them were donated to the program.
Okay.
So when Councillor Keithley came up with this idea, he just put a call out in the local news and through radio ads saying, we're doing this donation drive. If you have instruments in your basement, in your closet, you're not playing anymore, please bring them to us. We're going to try and start a program. And he had hundreds of instruments donated. And then again, a couple of years ago, we did another large drive and another 250 instruments came in. And so we've used the funds connected to the program to service them all, repair those that could be repaired. And we've ended up with an inventory of 450 instruments just from all those donated instruments.
Wow.
And then through some of the outreach programs, we do some really interesting interactions with noisemakers. So we have purchased a number of percussion instruments so that people can always hold something, hit something, shake something, mm-hmm. whatever it is. A lot of the people we serve could have physical or cognitive disabilities, and just that ability to have something in their hand or be able to have something in front of them that they can touch has made a massive difference. So those specific things might not have necessarily been donated, but we've supplemented the instruments available. So we now have over 600 instruments available for people to experience.
Lastly, Tanya Rankin explained her enthusiasm regarding the possibility of other local cities adopting similar programs regarding lending out musical instruments. She even has an entire plan set out for those interested in looking into this process.
Absolutely. I've created a template on how to do it, and it wouldn't have to be exactly how we did it. We did it in three stages. We did it with three complete different components. Anybody could take one of those pieces and roll it out. And so what I'm encouraging people to do is contact the program, contact me, and I have it all created. I'm happy to share so other places could do it as well. It was so easy. It took time, and just, you know, the time it takes to create create anything new, but it's templated. All the work, hard work is done, and I'd be happy to share it with anybody that would be interested in duplicating it in other municipalities or anywhere.
Once again, that was CJSF in conversation with Tanya Rankin, the Fine Arts Coordinator for the Harmony for All program in Burnaby. Thank you all so much for